This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. Today our special guest is Gary Adams, National Cotton Council. He'll join us in a moment. Let's get an update on the sorghum harvest. Brad Rippey is a USDA meteorologist.
The drought-affected sorghum crop, 77% harvested on October 30th, well ahead of the five-year average of 69%, but slightly behind last year's 79%. Sorghum harvest progress ranges from 64% complete in Oklahoma to already finished in Texas.
And for sunflowers?
The sunflower harvest going along very quickly. One quarter of the crop was cut during the week ending October 30th to reach 60% overall, well ahead of the five-year average of 45% and last year's 51%. Leading the way, Kansas, almost two-thirds, 65% of the sunflowers harvested by October 30th.
It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. We're joined today by Dr. Gary Adams. Gary is President and CEO, National Cotton Council. Gary, welcome back to the show.
Oh, Tony, thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you today.
Have our conversation here today as we're in the throes of harvest at this point. At least I think the entire cotton belt is going through harvest or has wrapped up harvest at this point. But no doubt that 2022 has been a challenging year.
Well, it has been, Tony, and certainly when we talk about the challenges we face this year, have to start with the extreme drought that we saw in much of the Southwest, particularly hitting Texas, Oklahoma, the Kansas crops really hard. So we're going to see reduced production there. You mentioned harvest. Harvest is moving along. USDA says that we're a little over halfway through harvest right now, which is a little bit ahead of pace. But again, we've seen a fairly dry fall in a lot of parts of the cotton belt. So that's allowed people to get in and get the cotton gathered. So we are seeing harvest move along. I think the concern right now is what we see in terms of watching the markets over these last, particularly the last 4 or 5 weeks.
There have been some concerns that maybe there's fewer acres to actually harvest or less yield in the fields than maybe USDA has projected. We saw some moves from USDA that really we've never seen in the past. A big cutback in August, then September revision upward. We saw them kind of hold the line there in October. Will we start finding where that bullseye is really on this year in November and December?
Well, I think we will, Tony, and you summed it up very well in terms of the changes that we've seen in the USDA estimates. The current estimate for the U.S. crop is 13.8 million bales. One of the things that surprised me a bit when the October number came out was the fact that you had the Texas crop actually increased relative to September. I believe USDA is at about 3.4 million bales for Texas, and then they made a few reductions in the Mid-South and Southeast that kept the U.S. crop largely unchanged from October relative to September. I do think as we, you know, pick up from harvest reports and anecdotal information that we're hearing, I tend to believe the Texas crop is going to be lowered somewhat from the USDA numbers. I don't believe we've captured all of the abandoned acres. In fact, if you look at the acreage reports that Farm Service Agency puts on their website every month, you've got some Texas counties who are not reporting any failed acres yet. And I think that's just largely a data gap that will get filled in as we go into the November report and then also into the December report. So my expectation is that USDA will eventually come off of that 13.8 million bale estimate, and perhaps they drop down into a low 13 number, maybe 13.3, 13.4, somewhere in that range for a U.S. crop.
Whenever we think of maybe not a train wreck, but a problem that is a weather-related problem in a major growing region, we think the market will react and move higher. But actually, we're sitting at some very surprising levels for cotton prices on the ICE at this point, and has many scratching their head. Any thoughts on why we could be seeing 70-75 cent cotton with what we've just described?
Yeah, I think that really what we're seeing is a market that's in search of demand. And as much as anything, this is a demand-driven situation that we're in terms of talking about the balance between supply and demand. Because you're right, the U.S. crop is down substantially from what it was last year. So regardless of where we land in the exact number, U.S. crop's going to be smaller. And we're really not seeing any bumper crops anywhere around the world. But what we are picking up is with the concerns about perhaps moving into a recession, and not just in the U.S. market, but in a more global basis, just concerned about cotton demand going forward. The consumers obviously seeing inflation across the board that's hitting their spending power. All those things are translating into a weaker demand. USDA has been lowering their estimate for world consumption, and in October, they took 3 million bales off of their domestic use number, going from 118.6 million bales down to 115.6 million bales. I think there's some question as to whether or not USDA has found the bottom on the demand side. Until I guess we get a better sense of what the overall economy is going to do and then translate that into cotton demand, this seems to be a market searching for a bottom. What concerns me also is maybe looking ahead at the 2023 contracts, particularly the harvest contracts for 2023 for cotton, corn, and soybeans. Where those contracts are trading right now sets up some of the lowest ratios in terms of cotton prices relative to corn and cotton prices relative to soybean that we have seen in quite a number of years. And in fact, going over the planting period for the last 20 or so years, these current ratios are as low as we've seen. So if they hold, that's my concern, that we're going to see some acres that can shift out of cotton into competing crops is likely to do so.
We're also watching something else that's happening right now, and this is something that happens usually every 5 years in D.C., and that's working to write a new farm bill. And it's time to, I guess, reauthorize what would be the 2018 farm bill. Could we see some rewrite of that farm bill, some changes coming to it? What do you see when you look at farm bill discussions going into 2023?
Well, we've had some, there's been some hearings that have been held as we've gone through 2022, both on the House Ag Committee side and the Senate Ag Committee side. I think one question obviously to watch for, and we'll have better answers in about a week or so, is we have midterm elections coming up. And of course, the full House of Representatives and 35 senators are up for re-election. And both of those the outcomes of those will determine who's going to hold the gavel as we go into the full-fledged debate of the farm bill. So that's the first thing to watch, is whether or not we see a change in both the House and or the Senate in terms of leadership moving from Democratic to the Republican Party. I think the other big factor to watch as we go into the farm bill is whether or not there can be any new resources devoted to the farm bill. And by, say, resources, budget resources, can the agriculture committees have some additional authority to work with in terms of crafting any tweaks to the farm policy. And we've seen, if we look back over the last 3 to 4 years, as we've gone through first the trade war with China and then the COVID pandemic, we've seen a lot of ad hoc assistance that has gone out to agriculture. That assistance is not in the baseline because it was of an ad hoc nature. So we're back to just what is expected spending under the baseline. The concern we have is when you look at still the volatility that we have in the markets and the increased cost of production, you know, we're concerned the safety net is just not as effective as it was 5 or 6 years ago. So I think the other message we have to see is can the agriculture committees have some additional budget authority with which to perhaps provide some enhancements to the safety net? And that's certainly a message we're going to be conveying as we go further into the farm bill process.
National Cotton Council, the recipient of a Climate Smart grant. What's happening there, and does that tie any way into the farm bill?
Well, I think it's hard to say how much it may tie into the farm bill, but one of the initiatives of this administration and of USDA was to seek proposals for projects that would work with producers, not just cotton producers, but producers across agriculture, to look at making some changes in farming practices, particularly those that are going to be reduce the environmental footprint. So in the case of cotton, a lot of things we're looking at would be the use of cover crops or the different tillage methods or perhaps different nutrient management plans. The National Cotton Council, and more specifically our sustainability initiative, the U.S. Cotton Trust Protocol, put a proposal in the mix. We were fortunate to be one of the recipients of the projects. We're working with USDA now to outline specifics, but that's going to allow us over the next 3 to 5 years to engage with producers in a cost-share manner to be able to perhaps address and make some of these changes in production practices that they believe will work on their farming operations. This is a pilot project, so we're only able to work with what we think will be maybe a few hundred cotton producers, but it also allows us to work with those producers and really measure the impact on soil health, measure the impact on carbon sequestration, measure the impact on greenhouse gas emissions. So I think there's a lot of positive information and positive data that can come out of the project. We also hope that it will be beneficial to those producers that we're able to engage with. I do think, kind of circling back to our farm bill discussion, we know that conservation or sustainability is going to be part of the farm bill discussion. We've already seen a boost in conservation programs through the Inflation Reduction Act. I think to the extent and exactly how that plays out in the farm bill is probably going to be somewhat determined by the outcome of the election. You know, we certainly support the working lands conservation programs that are administered by USDA. Those have brought a lot of positive benefits to producers and to the environment. And we want those to continue in a voluntary manner. And so we hope and we believe that those programs will continue and perhaps there may be even some enhancements in the farm bill.
Gary, as we wrap up our conversation, we're out of time here, but if we want to keep up with what's happening at the National Cotton Council, can we do that online?
You can, and we encourage anybody to go to the website of www.cotton.org and check out the information that we have. We also, for our members of the National Cotton Council, we've got a number of communication avenues that we keep our members informed, and that's through daily e-news updates, that's through a weekly Cotton's Week newsletter. We also have a weekly market report and some monthly market information. So we always want to be a resource to the industry, so encourage you to check out those options at cotton.org.
Dr. Gary Adams is President and CEO, National Cotton Council, on today's Agribusiness Report.
Did you know that the world-famous Café Du Monde has always used cottonseed oil to fry their beignets? Cotton Board invested over $1.5 million into cottonseed research and marketing last year with Cotton Incorporated, including research on the health benefits of cottonseed oil compared to other oils. Our goal is to make cottonseed oil the preferred cooking oil in kitchens across the country, like a Café Du Monde in New Orleans. Forever Cotton. Visit cottonboard.org/forevercotton.
It's time to get serious about just how good your tractor can be with the new Fendt 900, the ultimate row crop tractor, purpose-built to be the hardest working, most reliable, most comfortable tractor you can buy. With the best maintenance, service, and warranty program around, it's Fendt. It's time, and it's here. Learn more at livingstonmachinery.com and to find a location near you. Livingston Machinery, 24/7 service for your 24/7 operation.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Agribusiness Report. Again, our special guest today, Dr. Gary Adams with the National Cotton Council.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
Texas Corn Producers serves the state's corn farmers through both the Corn Board and the Association. The board is putting your checkoff dollars to work in research, promotion, and education to ensure producer profitability and market expansion. The member-supported association is the farmer's advocate in Austin and Washington, D.C. on issues from the Farm Bill, water and property rights, and more. Join the Texas Corn Producers Association today and get the latest news and information about Texas Corn Producers' efforts online at www.texascorn.org.
You're listening to the Agribusiness Report. Again, you can learn more about the National Cotton Council online at cotton.org.
When it comes to farming in dry conditions, the formula for success is simple. Put strong in, get strong out. That's why growers looking to improve yield potential while protecting their bottom line rely on dry, tough, dryland cotton varieties from Delta Pine. Bred, tested, and made tough to handle the toughest growing conditions. Stay strong this season. Plant dry, tough, dryland cotton varieties from Delta Pine. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing, and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Did you know that the world-famous Café Du Monde has always used cottonseed oil to fry their beignets? Cotton Board invested over $1.5 million into cottonseed research and marketing last year with Cotton Incorporated, including research on the health benefits of cottonseed oil compared to other oils. Our goal is to make cottonseed oil the preferred cooking oil in kitchens across the country, like at Café Du Monde in New Orleans. Forever Cotton. Visit cottonboard.org/forevercotton. Welcome back. It's the Agribusiness Report.
At World Food Price activities in Iowa a few days ago, Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack told his audience,
"I think it's important for us to recognize the role that conflict can play and does play and is playing today as we try to meet the needs of an ever-increasing world population."
Latest example of that effect coming just this past weekend with Russia's announcement that it would suspend participation in the agreement that had been allowing safe passage of Ukrainian grain shipments out of Black Sea ports. Result of that, a big 6% run-up in wheat prices amidst worries about possible food shortages among countries that depend on wheat from Ukraine. So, Tom Vilsack's message, which of course was delivered before this latest announcement by Russia, that still stands, though.
Food never, ever, ever should be a weapon of war. It is a sad reality today in Ukraine that it's being used as a weapon of war. That ought not to happen. And we as a world community should say very clearly that it's inappropriate.
Gary Crawford, Washington.